Attorney-client privilege. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So now we're going to talk about another topic that perhaps a deal lawyer wouldn't think they would ever be dealing with. But of course, if you're a lawyer, you're going to be dealing with attorney-client privilege frequently in your career. And so first of all, what is the attorney-client privilege?
Well, you know, I'm with you, Brock. I mean, I always thought when I was in law school that this is something that litigators deal with, and it's something that you know, you read in my classmate, my much richer classmate, I might add, David Baldacci's crime novels. But it's basically a legal rule that that protects a court or administrative body from compelling disclosure to another adverse party of communications between a lawyer and a client that were given for the purpose of obtaining legal advice, and it's for the benefit of the client, not the lawyer. It only protects communication, the essence of the communications that are actually had by the client and the lawyer, and it only extends to information that was given for the purpose of obtaining legal advice. If the information is available from another source, it's not protected, as a general rule. So you can't cloak it, basically, simply because you had a lawyer in the room, generally.
And how has it come up in the M&A context, typically?
Well, again, typically this, we think of it as a litigation issue, but remember, that is ultimately where it gets tested, but many M&A deals get litigated, either through fiduciary duty claims or disclosures claims made by the plaintiff's bar, or if things go south after the deal, by the buyer or the seller. So issues like who owns the privilege and whether you can protect it when you've had communications that have gone to the other side or with your own bankers and consultants as part of the deal, that's very important in M&A. So those kind of attorney-client privilege issues have been overlooked, but for a long time. But they've started to bubble up to the surface in recent years because they've become more prominent in litigation, where these issues have actually been litigated.
And realistically, as a junior lawyer, how much are you going to bump up against privilege?
You know, it's not something that. It's above your pay grade in many respects, but you have to be sensitive to these issues as you are involved in the transaction. You know, who are you talking with? What are you saying? You need to be very cognizant of that stuff when you're working on the deal, even though perhaps the negotiation of who owns the privilege after the deal or you know, how you protect privilege, it may be a little bit above your pay grade. Just be cognizant of that and be mindful that you know, if you're dealing with sensitive information, if you're dealing with something that a client told you, you have to be sensitive as to who on the deal team or whether you're sharing that with the other side, because you could very easily blow the privilege.
And post-closing, who does own the privilege after the deal is over, the closing's done?
Yeah, that's been something that a lot of ink's been spilled over in recent years, Brock, as you know. If it's a merger or a stock sale, the answer in Delaware is it's the buyer. Okay, that's the default answer anyway, if you haven't negotiated for something else. New York, the other major commercial jurisdiction that people tend to look at, the answer there is a little different. Generally, the transactional advice in New York belongs to the seller, but the advice given about the seller's general business, well, that belongs to the buyer after the deal. So structure also matters. In an asset deal, the privilege doesn't generally automatically go to the buyer. It's an asset of the seller that generally stays with the business unless you transfer it. But courts have been a little squishy about this, and if your agreement is silent about it and it looks like the entire business is being transferred in an asset deal, the court may conclude that the privilege goes along too, unless, you know, unless there's language in the agreement to the contrary. So even in an asset deal, you want to be very clear about the treatment of the privilege. If it's a retained asset, you want to be very, very clear of that as to that. If part of it's going, you want to delineate that very specifically. But the bottom line in all this stuff is you really shouldn't rely on default rules, and you should negotiate up front how you're going to treat the privilege and appropriately document that in the acquisition agreement, because I think the one thing that seems to be clear from the case law is that if you do that, the courts are going to respect the decision that you make.
And how can you protect communications with third parties, you know, in practice?
Yeah, and that's the other big issue on privilege is preserving the protection of communications among members of your deal team, and also sometimes between the parties. One thing that everybody knows is that the presence of a non-lawyer third party blows the attorney-client privilege, except that, like most things that everybody knows, that's not true. There are a couple of exceptions the courts have recognized. One applies where the third party is there to assist an attorney in understanding and interpreting complicated principles beyond his areas of expertise or areas of expertise. Another applies where the third party is so involved and intertwined with the client that it should be functionally equivalent to an employee of the client. Now, courts have used both of those exemptions to permit conversations with investment bankers and other consultants, allow them to participate in discussions with the lawyer advising the client without blowing the privilege, although the courts have interpreted the scope of these things differently and create uncertainties and unpredictability. Delaware is, I think, a little bit more clear here and is very flexible and probably the most liberal jurisdiction in terms of these type of communications between involving bankers and consultants and M&A. A case called 3Com versus Diamond 2 Holdings, the court said, look, a financial advisor doesn't have to be essential to interpret or facilitate the provision of legal advice to the client. If the advisor is involved in the communications between the lawyer and the client regarding legal matters, it's protected. So, you know, the court doesn't get bogged down in the details. Basically, if these communications were involved legal matters and they related to the transaction, the communication is generally privileged, regardless of whether or not it was disclosed to the financial advisor. Now, for communications between like a buyer and a seller, that's more complicated. Usually, people will point to what's known as the common interest doctrine as the most likely candidate to preserve privilege, and that doctrine says that parties that are represented by separate counsel but who share a common legal interest can communicate about that legal issue without waiving the attorney-client privilege. And the answer to whether that's going to protect those conversations depends on the issue you're dealing with and the jurisdiction you're in. New York got a lot of attention recently because the Court of Appeal in New York has taken a very narrow approach, and this common interest doctrine is not going to apply unless you've got a litigation that's ongoing or imminent. Again, Delaware is much more flexible and doesn't impose this requirement, but you're much likely, regardless of where you are, you're much more likely to have your communications protected if you're addressing, for example, a shareholder suit or an activist that's waging a campaign against the deal that both parties are interested in getting done, then you would be if you're trying to protect discussions about the contents of disclosure documents or relating to post-closing matters that a regulator might be interested in from an antitrust perspective. That's going to be tougher to protect under this doctrine.
Good stuff. Thanks very much.
You bet.